This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Our next guest is working on perhaps less sleep than I am, which is hard. We don't say that very often on this show. And there she is, live from either Iowa or Nebraska. We're not exactly sure. She could be straddling the state line, for all we know. Caroline, first of
Caroline
all.
Caroline Darney.
How much sleep did we get? When did we get back to the hotel room last night or this morning?
It was closing in around 2:30. I'm very jealous of Chester and Fuller right now. They look like they were having a wonderful snooze. But, you know, it was worth it to be in Omaha. It's very exciting. It's not a lot of sleep, but, you know, it's worth it for the experience.
You know, I found in my past history, real quick, Wes, I have found that once you reach 3 a.m., and I can speak for this because I get very little sleep. Once you reach 3, there's no need to sleep. You just keep going. You just wear yourself out. Because if you get to 3 a.m. and you're still going, sleep just gets in the way. That's how I looked at it.
That's when it turns from night to morning.
I think.
That's, you're no longer up late. You're now up early. So you really just got, I think, lean into the next day. And here we are.
Get a head start. So, you got a head start on the weekend, the way I look at it.
Hey, look, Packer, I want you to know we're dealing with a first-timer to Omaha, right? Never been, goes to the College World Series for the first time. So we have that. We're dealing with a Virginia undergrad, naval officer-ish, and now candidate for master's in the Darden School. We're not just dealing with Caroline Darney, SB Nation. We're dealing with a lot of this other impressive things. And, oh, by the way, has followed Virginia football, basketball, and baseball. So we'll get to the new Omaha and what your Omaha experience has been like, because I think you got a souvenir along with seeing the raccoon and everything else. So here's the premise of this. This team comes down to, unfortunately, an inning and a half or inning and two-thirds of baseball against Mississippi State. And last night, that's not fair. It's not fair to Brian O'Connor that this team be measured like that, but that's what happens in the finality of it. Why did this team grab people emotionally like they did, Caroline, in your mind?
There was just the way that the rest of the season, the back half of the season, this team started 4-11 in ACC play. A lot of people talking about how they had underperformed, and they did early, they underperformed, and it was the question of, will they make the tournament, will they be able to do anything? And then getting a spot in a regional, they spent, I think, 2 weeks in Columbia, their second home, and not only coming out of there, but coming out of there from the losers bracket. And then in dramatic fashion, you have Devin Ortiz that pitches 4 innings, shutout ball, and then hits the walk-off home run in the bottom of the 10th to get them to a super regional, where then they again face elimination and are, you know, 6-0 in elimination games going into the College World Series is a team that, like NC State, no one thought was going to be in Omaha. So not only did they do it by just getting there, but, you know, to beat Dallas Baptist in the game 3, they needed a grand slam from Kyle Teal, who's the lovable first year whose helmet can't stay on because he's got slippery hair, as he says. And so it's just, I think that's easy for people to appreciate in the storylines. And obviously when they got to Omaha, you have the beautiful moment with Logan Michaels getting his first home run of the season as his dad is in the stands on Father's Day. And it just, you know, last night they had the young girl that caught that home run ball that gave it to him, sitting with him in the stands in full Virginia gear. And I don't know, like, you have to be a robot at that point to not get some sort of emotion out of it. And, you know, there's a reason Brian O'Connor called this team one of the most special teams to put on a Virginia uniform, if not the most special, in his post game. And I don't know what else you can say about that. So that says so much, especially when he's coached such great teams that have, like in 2015, won the national championship.
Caroline, though, Virginia baseball has reached the point that when they get to Omaha, it's not that, man, isn't this cool, isn't this fun? They get to Omaha to win it because they've done it before. And that's the standard now that Brian, to his credit, and the staff and all the guys that have set that foundation expect Virginia to be there. The end of the day, though, you got to win. And, you know, I know last night or this morning was really difficult, but really the two losses had a theme, and that was the little things. And we had Daniel Pinheiro on the show yesterday, and I thought he hit it right on the money. It's the little things in games like this when these teams are so good and so talented and so competitive that you've got to do the little things to win. And, you know, key hits with two outs and runners in scoring position was really one of the reasons Virginia didn't close the deal against Mississippi State. Everybody talks about the no-hitter, but that game shouldn't have been close in the eighth inning. But it turned out to be. And you give Mississippi State all the credit in the world, they found a way to win. Same thing last night, right? It's 2-2. Till gets the leadoff double in the sixth. You got a man on second. You got momentum. You got to get him home. Some shape, way, or form, figuring this could be a close game. And the Penn didn't close the deal either in the eighth and the ninth, giving up those key hits with runners in scoring position with two away. It's the little things, though, are the reason Virginia is coming home and not staying in Omaha for at least an extended period of time.
Yeah, and that was, you know, you talked about the program and where they've gotten to at this point. And one of the things that was interesting about this team, and especially the way that they played in those elimination games, is you would expect that from a team that had been to the Omaha or been to a super regional, and this team hadn't done that. You know, the last time Virginia was in a super regional was when they won it all. So you think about some of that inexperience, I think, finally reared its head in Omaha, where you have those mistakes, those mental errors on the base paths. A huge play against Mississippi State was when they had a runner caught in no man's land and were unable to get an out of it. And then the next batter comes up and hits the 3-run home run, takes the lead, takes the momentum. And that really was kind of, you know, they would have not gotten the insurance run because they would have had two outs already. You know, and it's hard to do that with baseball because it's easy to say, oh, well, if this happens and this happens, it's never really like that because your approach changes. But it is, you're absolutely right. It was the little things, and that stuff that you think would come with experience, that if this team does have a chance to get back there later with some of these guys like Cotier and Teal and Geloff the younger, Jake, then you have these opportunities. Maybe they can build on this experience from this year and not make those mistakes. Because teams like Mississippi State and Texas will pounce on those moments because they're great teams, and that's why they're also in Omaha.
All right, so I'm going to fast forward here to next year. Who's the most, in other words, I guess, as we look to 22, who's the player from 21 that you think now becomes one of those key guys in 22? And I know years and eligibility are all screwed up. So if you say somebody like a Kyle Teal, that's the one that, you know, at least in my mind comes to first. But is there somebody else?
I think you look at the way, if Nick Kent comes back, the way that he played, he had web gems last night, and he's been that way in the postseason. He was just absolutely phenomenal in the field, snags left and right. He had that kind of snow cone catch over his shoulder that saved a run early. Obviously, the play in the ninth that with bases loaded, unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Awesome.
Just the heads up awareness to go where he did, and it, unbelievable play. And it's one of those plays that got audible gasps in the press box. You know, that's the kind of thing, like those are the plays that he was making last night. And so I think if he can get that bat going and get more consistent, he's just a guy that can be such a big piece. And he's a Charlottesville guy. He's got the good story, like locally went to Stab, St. Anne's Belfield, actually the same school as Connor Schellenberger. So these two guys have a chance to really make some noise at Virginia in the next couple of years, perhaps. But yeah, Teal is, anyone who's followed me in the past couple of weeks, months, knows that Teal is my guy. He plays so chaotic. He'll do anything that you want. He's, you know, making the plays from right field. He'll play catcher. He offered to pitch if Coach O'Connor needed it, which I just love that energy. I think I need more of that in my life. So I think those are two guys that you can keep an eye on. And honestly, Jake Geloff had such a great season at first base.
So Caroline, from a personal standpoint, the first Omaha experience, I've said this many times before on radio, I've said it even on this show, I've never met anybody that's gone out there that's come back and went, it's okay, it was pretty good. Nobody says that. Everybody comes back and goes, oh my God, it was so much fun. So with that said, your first Omaha experience.
Oh my God, it was so much fun. it's so great. I mean, I've got my Omaha t-shirt Friday. I wanted to make sure I follow all the, you know, traditions and everything coming on with you guys.
The protocol.
This morning.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm former military. Protocol is important. I got to hit these things. But it's just, there's nothing, you know, I walked into the press box, and thank goodness for, you know, I was sitting with Clinton Yates and McGee, Ryan McGee was there, and bless their hearts, they were so gracious with me being such a geek about being and looking at this, just even looking at the field, you know, and getting in there and having that moment. But you walk around, and obviously it's a little different this year. It's not quite as rambunctious or crowded because of everything COVID on the decline, hopefully all that stuff. But it's one of the first times I've been around this big of a crowd in a very long time. People are just so excited to be here. There's all the different colors and t-shirts and jerseys, and there's music. It's so great. And there's great places to go, and everyone was so helpful. And it's just this experience that is electric. And I'm just so glad I was able to come. And it's one of those, everyone says it's a bucket list thing, and I feel cheesy to agree, but it was awesome. I had so much fun.
All right. So two part question. How did you get a foul ball? How did that happen?
Oh yeah. So that's a complete, just, you know, trickery online. We walked by the room where the staff was prepping with mud, and I asked if I could have one. So, I don't know if I need to come up with a better story, but that's
no.
how that actually works.
Pac, do you need to come by with it? Yeah, that's got to be a better story. We got to get a better story.
Caroline, I got to be honest with you. I'm not going to be critical of you because you're working on 46 minutes of sleep and you're rocking it, but I would have just flat out lied. I would have just said, listen, the ball comes back. McGee was scared to death being a Tennessee guy, too, in barbecue. He went underneath the desk. I reached over and snagged it. I would have come up with some crazy story. I'd have knocked the raccoon off with my elbow and fought the raccoons over that last ball. I would have come up with something. I wouldn't have just gone,
I kind of found it
in the hallway.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Yeah. All right. Second thing, did you in fact see the raccoon?
No. So I
in
had
the press
to,
box.
So I got in on Monday night, and so I had a Darden, you know, something I had to do for school that Saturday. So I didn't get in until after. And I legitimately was like, I cannot believe of all the things I missed the press box raccoon. I was devastated. I've texted multiple people about this. I mentioned it yesterday because there was a loud noise. And I was like, maybe the raccoon is back, you know. And I was actually only one excited about that prospect. But you know, we did get to go to the Omaha Zoo. If you haven't been to Omaha, like if you do come, definitely go to the zoo. If you have been here and you've gone to the zoo, you know what I'm talking about. It was amazing. We had a blast. And it was just a fun outing. I did get burned because it's Nebraska. So one day it's completely storming and the next day you're 95 and getting burned at the zoo. But you know, it was worth it.
Did you, cross state lines and make some money in Iowa?
I crossed state lines, but not to go to the casino. I was very responsible. I did go into Iowa.
That's disappointing.
You got to pay off that business school loan. The only way to do it is let it ride.
You
let it
ride. You got to pay back. Come on,
here
let's
we go.
Go. Hey, safe travels. Great to see you. I'm glad you got to Omaha. I'm sorry it's ended for Virginia. But here's the good news. We'll all be in Charlotte next month. We'll all be in Charlotte.
I have one more question.
I'm so excited.
I got one more question. Caroline, are you flying American Airlines on the way home?
Ooh, I think I'm United.
Ooh, you're good. You're good.
But I am coming through Charlotte.
You're good.
You're good.
You're good. Because if you're flying American, because here's what I was going to tell you. I know you're working on 43 minutes of sleep because that game ended like a half an hour ago. But if you're flying American Airlines, given their track record, I'm convinced that Mark Emmert runs their airline. I was going to say, if you're flying American getting back home, you're probably going to be able to get caught up on sleep because that plane's going to be delayed, I don't know, 2-3 days before you get back to Charlottesville. So, nevertheless, safe travels coming on.
I don't need any of that. I need to get back to my dog. Yeah, she's going to be devastated that I'm missing Bring Your Work Dog to Work Day because she's, you know, she's always with me. She actually made it on the show before I did. So, you know, now I'm finally catching up to my dog. So,
well, congratulations on your foul ball. I wish the Hoos were staying longer. But like Wes said, we'll see you next month for the kickoff here in the Queen City.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wes, I told you I'm going Jeff Collins on you today, a little fake left, go right, because what a better day to debut this T-shirt than what happened last night on the diamond, where I think they're still in second place. Maybe they're in third. I don't know. But you know who got not only beat, but no hit by the Chicago Cubs last night. So here you go. This shirt never, let me emphasize it, never goes out of style. That's all you got to know right there.
B-Dye.
There you go. I mean, wear this every Friday.
That's all.
Every Friday.
just for the principle of the issue more than anything else? Is
just
that right?
Just to emphasize a statement and a fact. It's time to fill in the blank. It's time to fill in the blank.
Yes. Let's go to Bristol, where everything is sunshiny. Brought to you by the Lumberjacks. Look at that, Pac. We got a sponsor.
Yeah, we got a new sponsor.
The Lumberjacks.
Goodbye, Dish.
And
hello, Lumberjacks.
That's right. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the voice of victory, Josh Macri.
Got his own on his own carton right there. Macri,
there you
right
go.
There. Tossing grenades.
Yeah. That's right. The first of many.
First of many.
Yeah. Let's do a little fill in the blank, guys. A lot of us are a little bit groggy this morning thanks to the start time out there in Omaha last night.
Speak for yourself.
Well, fair enough. It started at 9:46 local, 10:46 where all of us are, which brings us to our first question. The latest a baseball game should be allowed to start, local time, is blank.
8 p.m. 8 p.m.
What in the world?
I'd say
10. I'm a 10.
Well, wait a minute. What time did you go to bed last night? Well, wait a minute. What time did you go to bed last night?
9:25.
Well, then how are you going to start a game at 10?
I don't know. The latest a baseball game should be allowed to start. 10.
Wait a minute. You can't say 10 when you're in bed at 9:30. You can't say 10.
9. How about 9?
All right.
Whatever. I mean, I'm just thinking last night started, in my opinion, last night started too late, but that's me.
Well, obviously. But you're sound asleep.
That's it.
In normal time, 8 o'clock, you start the game at 8, you can be done by 11:30. Worst case scenario, 8 o'clock. Yeah. If it's the Dodgers, 2 a.m.
So there you go.
2 a.m.
All right. Next, Josh.
All right. Obviously, last night, a heartbreaker for the Hoos, but a good season nonetheless. Fill in the blank. It takes you, personally, blank number of days to get over a season-ending loss by your favorite team?
Wait a minute. I got to ask a qualifier here.
Yeah.
Are we having a great year in losing, or is it, hey, I'm glad it's over kind of year? I mean, it depends what kind of season you're having.
A heartbreaker, you know, where it could have been something special and it comes to a sudden end.
All right, so it's a championship-caliber kind of year, and all of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt.
Are you enjoying asking this question, Macri?
Why would you say that?
I'm just asking. Are you enjoying asking this question?
Well, I don't know.
Question?
I mean, because the next fill in the blank was Pac, who's really great with how many days things have been in the past. I was going to ask him how long it's been since 28-3.
Well, the point that's why I asked you the question about – that's why I asked you the question about okay, if you're having a championship year where you really thought you could win a championship, whether it be pro, college, whatever – boy, when you go down, it hurts. I would say at least a week. At least a week. 7 days.
You know, I tend to process these things a little quicker than others. My wife is still not over 51, Josh. Make a note of that next time you see her. But I would say that I was okay in about 48 hours.
Are you talking about when the Falcons lost?
I was a
Super Bowl. Is that the 51?
Yes,
is that the
Bowl.
Reference? Okay. A lot of folks might
yeah, the 51,
up on.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many days has it been since
Falcons.
February 5th, 2017?
We move on.
Let me put it in perspective. When the Giants lost Game 7 of the World Series to the stupid rally monkeys, That took me about a, that took me about a week when they lost Game Six. Because they should have won Game Six. Right. That would have been the end of it. That would have been another World Series title. That one hurt. That one took about a week. I got to be honest with you. That one stung.
Okay.
So 7 days for me.
Well, Wes, I mean, you. All right. You said I was going to lob some bombs. You said it.
It is. That's
you
why
threw a grenade.
Voice of victory. Go. There he is throwing a hand grenade right there.
Voice of victory. Yeah, throwing threw bombs. A grenade right in there.
And the next time the Falcons are about ready to blow a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl, you can just get up and turn off the PlayStation.
Oh, wow. Wow. Get the sharp object grenade out of the room today. Goodness gracious.
There we go.
Macri.
Blank ACC football teams will win 10 or more games this season. We're not going to show you on the screen what Vegas is saying, but suffice it to say that Clemson, Carolina, and Miami are all in that range, according to the guys in the desert.
I'm going to go three.
I'm going to say three. I'm three. I'm going three as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there'll be two or three with eight or nine, too. Two or three with nine. So, but three teams will win 10 or more.
I'll take it a step further. Whatever Vegas said, you said it's Clemson, North Carolina, and Miami's close. I think of the three that I think will be there, I think there will be a team that's not named Clemson, North Carolina, or Miami. I think there will be one
team that
is not in that group that will reach double digits this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's a tease. There's a tease for you.
Nice. Keve Aluma yesterday announced that he will be coming back to Blacksburg.
Thank goodness.
He will lead Virginia Tech in blank number of categories next season.
Three.
It was three last year, by the way.
Yeah, I'll go with three again.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm going to go this might not be the blocks I get, points, rebounds, and I'm going to go field goal percentage. I'll throw that in there.
That's a good get for Mike Young now. That was a thank you very much. Ooh. Glad to hear that news. It's been a good week as far as players coming back. We went about two or three months, yes. Wes. It felt like everybody had left the building. But it's been a good week this particular week as far as North Carolina, Florida State, and Virginia Tech are concerned on the basketball comeback home front. It's been good news.
Yeah, it's been a real good 48-72 for sure in terms of guys. Raquan Evans at Florida State, Armando Bacot, Carolina, Keve Aluma at NC State, and we got a little bit of clock left on the return thing. So let's hope that sorts itself out too. So, all right, Josh.
So we saw the three that he led in. It is worth noting that he was third in assists, third in steals, and of course, as you saw on the screen, second in minutes. In Omaha so far, there have been 17 replay reviews. None of them have resulted in an overturned call. By the time it's all said and done in the College World Series, how many plays will be overturned thanks to replay? Fill in the blank there.
One. They get
25.
No, one. One. No, you know, how many replays will lead to an overturn? I think they're going to get – eventually there will be one that gets overturned. How many will there be? I would go over 40.
Oh, come on. Not 40. We've had 17.
I know, but guess what? These are pressure games now, and these guys will really the tightening up will really come into play now. Everybody will want every play reviewed now. I mean, we now get into the Final Four. Wes, that number is going to go through the roof. We'll eventually get one overturned. Eventually.
Well, I don't know. It's going to have to be in broad daylight to get overturned, because there have been three or four that should have been overturned that weren't.
Right.
The Virginia play the other night against Mississippi State or whatever it was, at second base play.
It's terrible.
We'll get one that's overturned, but it's going to have to happen in broad daylight in front of everybody, and but we're going to have 25 replays total at least. We're going to have at least eight more.
Easy.
Yeah. So, just ridiculous. It's as bad right now in that sport, I believe, as it is in any sport, Mark. the replay system, the whole thing. I don't know what they're doing. You see it on video and you go, wait a second, how in the world are you staying with that call? I don't get it.
I went off on it on radio this week and just said, you know, can we just scrap the whole thing? Seriously, until we get like professional tennis, in which in 10 seconds, there's a display, here's the review, here's the call, good, we move on. That's how long it should take.
Yeah.
Until we get to that point, let's eliminate review and replay because we just simply can't get it right. I mean, it takes forever.
Yeah.
It stops the entire flow of a game or sport, whatever it may be, and I'm not sure they get it right in the first place. So, you know what? Yeah. Players make mistakes. Coaches make mistakes. Referees make mistakes. It's a tough gig. Make a call. And I think these guys are becoming so dependent on, well, I'm not sure what it is. Let's just stop what we're doing and let's go and put the ears on. I think even the umpires and the refs have been influenced to the point where they aren't strong in making calls. Hey, I am sure he is out or he's safer, whatever the case may be. It's replay is really screwing up sports big time. Big time.
Yeah. All right. You know what? Maybe we'll talk to Dan McDonald about some of this too. See what he says, just in terms of the replay.
Hey, by the way,
fill in the blank.
Do you know last night who made the last out in being no hit by the Dodgers? Do you know who was at the plate last night for the Dodgers when they got no hit by the Cubs?
No, I do not.
Will Smith.
Okay.
You know who Will Smith played for? Louisville. I liked him at Louisville.
Yeah, I know.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. NC State Vandy. This afternoon, God willing, if Mother Nature gets out of the way, we'll have that first pitch around 2 p.m. Eastern time. And our next guest knows both of them extremely well because he had incredible success against both of them this year. And he's done an amazing job at Louisville, hasn't he? Wes, this guy's a big-timer.
Yo. Yeah, Dan McDonald, always great with his time to join us here on Packer and Durham this morning. I know you'd like to be there. I know how every coach lives to that environment and what that event means. Have you enjoyed watching this, though, Mac? Because it's been some pretty good baseball, been some really good college baseball here since a week ago Saturday.
It's great baseball. I mean, no doubt your first choice is to be there, but I'm a fan of the game, and I know I'm so familiar with the programs, the players, the coaches. As you said, you know, the matchup today, we played – NC State three times. We play Vanderbilt every year in the Battle of the Barrel and seem to run across them in the postseason. So I'm very familiar with the programs. I've got some special relationships with, of course, Mississippi State. You know, Chris Lemonis is one of my best friends, and we played together at the Citadel, and he was our recruiting coordinator here for 8 years. So there's always a lot of connections. But just being a fan of the game, man, it's hard to not love college baseball if you're watching it.
Coach, I've always found the baseball situation to be very similar to basketball, that we get to this stage and we're down to the final four, if you will, because that's what we are. But the trees of coaching in baseball have always fascinated me because it's such a tight fraternity. It seems like everybody knows everybody. There has always been some type of relationship, and you just rattled through it. And I'm just sitting here laughing when you were doing it, thinking, well, this happens all the time. We see this in hoops all the time. But it's the same deal with baseball, too, especially with the programs that have had great success like yours.
There's a lot of respect. I think we're blessed. We get to coach a game that we love. But if you really dig in deep, there's a lot of challenges, you know, with our scholarship situations, our coaching allotments, managing the draft. So there's just – I think there's a lot of respect amongst college baseball coaches. Knowing how hard we work and the challenges we face, and the longer you're around, the more you get to know these guys. I mean, you go back 20, 25 years and you know, you're recruiting, you're sitting next to Tim Corbin and you're both assistants. And so you have these relationships with coaches for so many years, wives get to know each other. You run into these guys in the Cape Cod League. So I always say the fans get real fired up about these rivalries, but amongst coaches, we're all pretty close.
I think we lost Wes's audio, so let me take it from here while we get Wes's audio figured out. All right, you mentioned the fact you've seen both Vandy and NC State. You've had great success against them this year. We know about Vandy's great pitching situation, but what has made NC State tick, Coach? I mean, they've been on a remarkable run here all away from home. I mean, Ruston's a tough place. Fayetteville and Arkansas, incredible. And now they're out there in Omaha rocking and rolling. What have you seen with NC State based when you played them versus what the Pack's doing right now?
As an ambassador of the league, I'm so proud of what the ACC has been able to accomplish in the postseason. Wasn't ideal this past spring, and we had some challenges to overcome, but just felt like once our teams got into the postseason that they would do damage. Maybe felt like we didn't get the respect that we deserved on that selection Monday or whatever you call it, but just knowing once our teams start to play in the postseason, we'll represent, and we've done it. I mean, from obviously Notre Dame making the great run, you know, losing on one game away from Omaha, having to go to a real tough place like Starkville, Mississippi, Virginia making the great run, and then NC State, you know, the hottest team in the country right now. And we played NC State early. They're pitching, you know, it's really just trying to get those guys in the right places. So a guy like Justice was the Friday starter. And we got to him. You know, you have to go through the lineup two or three times, and we were able to get to him on a Friday night. You know, now he's probably one of the best closers in the country. And so it's just finding the right roles for pitchers. You know, this year we started conference games the second weekend of the season, where in the past we normally get 3 to 4 weekends of non-conference games. Those 3 to 4 weekends are crucial for us trying to figure things out. It doesn't matter how much we practice or scrimmage in the fall. There's nothing like the lights being on and the season starts. And how do guys manage that? And how do they perform under those lights in that atmosphere? And we just didn't have it this year. So you just kind of had to learn on the fly. And so a program like NC State thought they had their pitching and their team lined up the way they wanted. But after a month or so, you realize, you know what, let's maneuver some guys around. And you got to give Elliot Avent and his staff a lot of credit. They've been doing this for a long time, and they've been very consistent at it.
All right, today they'll see Vanderbilt, and again, a great 2-1-2 combination on the Hill. Today it'll be against Rocker. If you're NC State, Elliot Avent, and they've gone through a great run here. They beat Copps at Arkansas. Beck's out of sight at Stanford. They beat him. They take care of Leiter in an absolute classic earlier this week, beating Vanderbilt. But if you're NC State, what's the approach against Rocker this afternoon?
Well, as you're saying, NC State and the approach, I still think of, hey, just pitch and defend. Like, that's what's gotten you here. You've had enough offense, and that's all you need to do is score one more run than your opponent, as they did at Arkansas, as they did at Vanderbilt. Not to take anything away from their hitters. They got really good hitters. But the reason they're playing so well is they pitch and defend. So that's the name of the game. Offensively, yes, as everybody you're facing this time of the year, you just got to grind out at-bats, and you got to try to manufacture. Rocker's got the electric fastball, but it's really the breaking ball. It's a swinging miss breaking ball that I haven't stood in the box and faced it, and our team hasn't. I've only watched it on TV, but there's a reason guys are swinging at a breaking ball that looks like it's going to be in the zone, and then it falls short of the zone. And so they do a great job with their hitters, I'm sure. They'll compete and have a really good approach. But as we saw the other night, you know, when Vanderbilt didn't play their best, they made some mistakes defensively. And so pitch, defend, and just try to get a timely hit and score one more run than your opponent.
So it's more about, hey, just take care of what you've been doing as opposed to who you're playing.
Exactly. I mean, the scouting report's important, and you want to know as much information as you can, but it can also tie some kids up, stay loose, stay free, keep doing what you're doing. You have a game plan. But again, if you pitch and defend, you have a chance. And that's where and again, NC State always has good hitters and they always got a really good offense. But going into a game at this time of the year, that's the key. And they've got that shutdown bullpen that if they can get past 5 or 6 innings, man, their bullpen lines up well. And let's face it, that's Vanderbilt baseball. Great hitters, they can score a bunch of runs, but traditionally it's the reason they're so consistent They're dominant on the mound. They really defend, and they just play the game the right way. And if you do that more often than not, you give yourself a chance to win.
Dan, when you get to this part of the year, and you get in a game like today, and all of a sudden the rain hits, do you worry about it as a coach, or is that just kind of standard category operating procedure for baseball at this point?
Well, as I say, we got a lot of respect for coaches around the country. I mean, we deal with this all year. It was spring training in January. I mean, we call January spring training. The season starts the middle of February. Baseball coaches and players, they're used to this. Heck, fans are used to it. You're really good baseball fans. They're used to the weather delays. I think what Virginia started that game at 9 a.m. And we laughed last night. They start at what, 10:30 Eastern time, give or take. So I think college baseball players, coaches, and fans are as prepared as anybody. You just deal with it, and it's just another day in baseball.
Dan, total separate issue. Are you concerned about the amount of reviews in a college baseball game?
Well, I don't know about the amount of reviews. I'm a big fan of it. I went through a period of my career where I felt like I was arguing a lot of calls. We steal a lot of bases, a lot of bang bang plays at second. I'm running out there. I'm losing my mind. The call's never getting overturned. It's just an opinion. I get thrown out in a game in Omaha because I think my guy is safe at second, and we're down one run in the elimination game. And if you notice, the elimination games are the most stressful. Okay, I've been there. And we didn't review it at that time. We didn't have review capabilities. Then as we started to review, it dawned on me halfway through a college season, man, I'm not getting headaches as much. I'm not losing my mind as much. I'm not getting in arguments as much. It's so nice to just jog out there and say, you know, hey, Steve, I think you missed it. Well, no, Dan, I think I got it right. Well, would you mind reviewing it? And I think it's the right thing. Now, doesn't mean we can't get better at it. Doesn't mean we can't be a little more efficient, speed the process up for everybody. At the end of the day, we make a lot of decisions based on the fans, right? We're trying to speed the game up. We want action, especially in baseball. We need action. So I would hope these are things we just address every year. And how do we speed it up? How are we a little more efficient? But at this time of the year, you want to get the call right. You just, you know, I still have a controversial foul ball down the left field line that, you know, that haunts our fan base and our program. You want to get these calls right. And unfortunately, it just takes a little bit more time, and hopefully we can get a little more efficient in the future.
I know this event is special to you, not just as the head coach of a team that's been there, but it's special to anybody involved in college baseball. In your mind, why is it so perfect to have this event in that town? And what is it? I mean, it's this holy grail to a degree, Mac, but it is a perfect fit. Pac talks about it might be the best event in college sports, period. And I don't disagree much. I mean, I've been to CFP title games. I've been to a bunch of Final Fours. I've been to a Super Bowl. This thing is really, really good, and it seems just to have this mystique about it too.
I think there's a lot of factors. It's got that Field of Dreams feel, right? You're in the Midwest. You're in the great Midwest. Maybe a lot of people don't travel through Nebraska. If you live on the East Coast or the West Coast, you might fly over Nebraska, but to say you're driving through there or stopping, you have the consistency. The same city every year. Now, what are we going on, like 70 years, give or take? So, you know, as a player, as a coach, you say it's about going to Omaha. You don't say we want to go to the College World Series. It's Omaha. It's a destination that you're trying to get to. I think of this. It wraps up the year in sports from football in August to the Labor Day football games, all the way through into basketball, and I don't want to take anything away from the other fall and winter and spring sports, but it's the last sport of the year, and especially in this year. Think about the challenges and the struggles that we've went through. There's no better way to end the year with 25,000 fans at TD Ameritrade. And if anything, it springboards us and it gives us hope that a football season and fall sports are around the corner. And, man, we're looking forward to getting back to what we call normalcy, right?
Amen to that. Mm. Perfectly well said.
Yep, well said. Great to see you. Be well. Hope we get there in the fall so we can go shoulder to shoulder a little bit and catch up. Always great to have you on our show, man.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Have a great summer.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Kayla Traynor was with us yesterday, and she's had a lot of stuff going on. In fact, in the last 2 weeks, she's won a national championship as an assistant lacrosse coach for the BC women, and now she's the new head coach at her alma mater, and yesterday she joined us to talk about the last 14 days.
It's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. Just, you know, winning a national championship was something that was an incredible experience, and I'll never forget. And then, you know, get the call to come and interview for this job and going through that process, and then getting the call that it's me and they want to hire me was just crazy and unbelievable. And I'm just enjoying the ride, and I have no idea what will be the third. I hope there is a third. But yeah, it's been great, and I'm really excited.
Kayla, take it, and I'm going to ask you the same question we asked Hubert Davis when he was named the basketball coach at North Carolina, and John Shire when he was named the next basketball coach at Duke. How emotional does this get with this particular job and this particular situation, as opposed to had it been some other school to offer you the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a dream come true, you know, and sometimes I think about it and I'm just like, I couldn't even imagine this. And, but here I am. I woke up this morning and was like, what just happened? And, but it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. It's super emotional. I'm really proud to be here. I have an incredible amount of love and admiration for this school and this program. So super emotional, but you know, I'm just proud and really excited to get going.
Kayla, the combination of you and Gary Gate, as far as alums, coaching, and doing what you want to do at a place that you love, I'm not sure there's another combination in the country, regardless of sport, that has alums in place that would be more impressive than what you've got at Syracuse.
Yeah, this school treats their alumni well. And when you leave, you're always a part of the Syracuse family. And it's obviously really true. You know, they kept it in the family, which obviously I'm really happy about. And it's just a special place. And it's really unique. And going here, you know, was an amazing opportunity. So to have the support and have Gary still here and, you know, be an alum here is just, it's unique. It's certainly unique, but I like the way Syracuse did it, and I'm proud to be here.
Obviously, a great experience at Chestnut Hill with Acacia Walker-Weinstein and the success you guys had at BC. More we talked to the players there, they talked about the staff and what it meant to play for you guys. So what did you learn there? What is the take there from Acacia and your colleagues that you think can be implemented, if you will, at Syracuse to follow another great program? I mean, you know how successful your alma mater's been. So how do you mix and match the two, I guess?
Yeah, I have to thank Acacia. It was the opportunity of a lifetime that she gave me to be a part of her staff and be on that ride with that team. It's truly incredible. So I owe her a lot, you know, for, you know, me having this opportunity now, and she means a lot to me, and she's a great friend of mine, so I love her very much. And then for the players, that's something I thanked yesterday too in the press conference, was all the players that played for me. I love them, and that's what coaching is all about, and they taught me a lot. So I had an amazing experience that I'll never forget, and you know, BC will always be really special to me. And that team and that group of players is really unique, and they were amazing. So I think I learned a lot. There's so much that I learned about myself and coaching, and you know, now leading Syracuse, I'll be able to take my own philosophies here and lead this program. But in general, I think the biggest thing I learned was just, you know, how to be a champion and how to win and how to be competing for championships year in and year out. So hopefully I can bring that over to this program that's also had a lot of success and just focus on building upon the success they've already had.
All right, Coach, I'm going to put you in a funky spot here. You had to scout and game plan against Syracuse when you're at BC. What do you know about Syracuse?
Well, something I love is that this is quite a talented team, and they're returning a lot of their weapons. So, you know, obviously they graduated some amazing players, but there's a lot of talent back on this roster. And, you know, scouting against them, playing against them four times last year was difficult. And this is a great unit and great team offensively, defensively, and in the midfield. So I'm excited to take over and have a lot of returning talent back on the roster.
Appears to be an excellent hire by John Waldheck. And that is some combination they've got now in the Syracuse coaching room, going down the hallway on both the men's and the women's side. Outstanding job.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.